Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am so glad you decided to join me again. My name is John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is one of my all-time favorite writers, and I seriously never go more than a few months without rereading his book, Choose Yourself, and I am super excited for this conversation. He is an American hedge fund manager, entrepreneur, best-selling author, blogger, and podcaster. He has founded or co-founded over 20 companies, and 17 have failed. But he sold one of them for $15 million and spent all of the money. All of it. Then he built another and sold it within the first year for $10 million. He fails quickly, he fails frequently. He claims entrepreneurship is a sentence of failures punctuated by brief success. He has invested in 28 private companies. He advises about another 50 private companies, companies ranging from $0 in revenues to $1 billion in revenues. This conversation is a bit longer than usual, but you will not even notice because there's not a second wasted. Now, let's hack James Altucher. I want to thank today's awesome sponsor, FreshBooks, not only for sponsoring Hack the Entrepreneur, but also for personally helping me fix one of my biggest problems. I am absolutely terrible at staying on top of my bookkeeping and accounting for my business. Now, rather than losing receipts and handing my accountant a giant box of papers at the end of the year, FreshBooks has an amazing app for my phone that lets me instantly take pictures of my receipts and sort them with the touch of a single button. FreshBooks is designed for small business owners and is the number one cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners to save time and get paid faster. FreshBooks integrates directly with three things that I use every day in my business: PayPal, Stripe, and MailChimp. To start your 30-day free trial today, go to freshbooks.com/hack. And don't forget to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I can't even believe I get to introduce this guy today. But welcome to the show, James.
John, thanks for having me on the show. This is really great. I like the title too, Hack the Entrepreneur.
Thanks, James.
I hope it doesn't mean with an axe, though.
It depends on how the interview goes. All right, okay, James.
I'll make sure then that it'll be as good as possible, or I'll try.
Excellent. Hey, James, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
What most things that you do fail, right? So whether you're an entrepreneur or not an entrepreneur, most things just in general fail. Like people might go, you know, might date a dozen potential spouses before they find their spouse. People might start a bunch of businesses before they have a business that makes money. People might start and stop 10 books before they finally write a book. So that implies several things are important. One is persistence is really important, because I know people who've started a business, and I've been this way too, and then it fails, and then it's like, you know what? I am not cut out for this. I am never going to do this again. It is so annoying and so painful. I just don't want to do it. Oh, I'm actually making my sound better right now.
Oh, yeah.
Does that sound better?
Oh, wow, yeah.
All right. You can keep this in the podcast too. It's good. Okay. It's good to see how things go wrong. Excellent. I just failed at making my sound better, and now I made my sound a little better. So persistence is really important, but persistence is not something like you're born with. Like a little baby doesn't get born and say, you know what, life's going to be pretty difficult from here on out. It was pretty easy while I was in the womb, but now I got to make sure I persist through all the times that I cry and I don't get fed and all this other stuff. So persistence is something you learn and something you get through. And, you know, I kind of had to learn the hard way. Every time I said, oh my God, I can't believe this horrible thing is happening to me again, I kind of had to learn the hard way, take a step back and say, look, that was one experiment that didn't work out. Now I'm on to the next experiment. I mean, life itself is like a sentence of failures and only punctuated by the briefest of successes. And that doesn't mean it's constantly like up and down, up and down, up and down. Hopefully it's more like a roller coaster that's kind of taking you up in the long run. And I think that's largely true, particularly as you keep yourself, you know, healthy and you have persistence and you figure out that there's many different ways to succeed and make money. But the other thing I want to add, it's incredibly important to give. So, you know, I got a question yesterday. Someone said to me, I have an idea for a video game. How do I patent it? And how do I prevent other video games from stealing it? And how do I sell it to a video game company? So he wanted all these things. That's fine. But he was so concerned with how does he protect himself? And then before he even develops the idea, he's already thinking, how does he sell it to a video game company? Well, does it actually do anything for people? Does it help people? Does it entertain people? You know, does it do both? Like, why don't you, very cheap to make a video game, particularly if it's a basic video game, why don't you make it and see if people actually use it? Then you know you have a good idea. Most people don't know. Most ideas are bad. So even if you have an idea that you think is good, it's, chances are it's not so good. So why don't you first test to see if this is a good idea or not? And then you could start thinking about deals you can make. You can't make a deal with nothing. An idea, as much as I'm happy for people to come up with ideas, ideas are ephemeral. They go away. They're like ghosts. You have to actually make the idea before you can sell it or do things with it or even protect it. So the important thing here is to always be thinking of giving to others. Are others going to have value from this? Are others going to be entertained by this? Are others going to be able to make use of this to make their lives better? So this is really important. And, you know, those are kind of the basics, I think, of entrepreneurship. The real basic for me, and I had to learn this the really hard way, is, you know, and then the real hard way is failing and losing a ton of money and just really struggling with like money and family and everything. You have to keep yourself physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually healthy. And I've talked about that in a number of places, but building that basic foundation of health. You know, and they're all connected. Like, you can't be mentally healthy if you're physically sick all the time. You can't be like grateful for what you have if emotionally you're only around bad, you know, people and bad situations. So they're all connected. And that's kind of the basic foundation that needs to be built for the house of entrepreneurship to be built on top of, for the ability to what I call choosing yourself to be built on top of. And so I guess for me, those are the basics of entrepreneurship. And I'll add, I know I'm talking a lot. I'll add, even with all that, you're still going to fail most of the time. But, you know, you start to basically learn how to transform that from failure to calling it an experiment and saying, okay, well, I just got to keep on doing the next thing. There's a reason for everything. And I don't always know what my best interests are. And so I'm just going to keep going because I have to. There's nothing else to do.
I was going to say, like, is it really failure? Or I saw actually on your blog and you replied to somebody and you said there's like this whole thing about like failure. Everyone's like glorifying failure. And it's kind of just they're hard problems we have to get through.
Exactly.
And I liked the way you said that. That was like, yeah, it's not failure. Like, it's not like, okay, well, now I'm dead and that's it. I never get to do anything else. It's like you're just a hard problem you have to work through.
And, you know, I'm sure when a lot of people use Thomas Edison as this great example. Like, oh, he tried 1,000 times to make, he failed 999 times to make the light bulb. And on the 1,000th try, he finally succeeded. I'm sure he did not once think for a second, ugh, I just failed again. It was 998 times I failed. I'm sure he just thought to himself, okay, that experiment didn't work. I'm going to move the wire over here and now we'll try this. Like, it's all experimenting. And, you know, if you view it as failure, that's a very negative way to view things and it'll stop you from eventual success. Everything that you do prepares your way for eventual success. So Thomas Edison, you know, every experiment prepared himself for that 1,000th experiment where the light bulb actually, you know, stayed lit. And if he had given up like 500 times too and said, you know what, no one's ever going to make the electric light bulb, he never would have done it and guaranteed, you know, somebody else would have. So it's just a matter of, you know, having the health to stay with it and be persistent and keep being creative so you can try new things. And all of these things added up together guarantee add up to success. And success means both inner success, because by the time you end, with something that works, you're in a much better place psychologically than when you began, and in a much better place creatively and spiritually and so on. And it also adds up to outward success, because the outward is really a mirror of what's going on inside of you. And that's how you find abundance.
Yeah, I agree. And so with finding the success and working through the hard problems, and so somebody emails you about a video game and this idea, and you say, well, just make the game. But what about if you think, well, maybe I'm not someone to make a video game. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, does anybody know what they're doing before they do it?
I don't think so. I think a little bit, and this is kind of like, so I kind of gave like just the basics of what I view as entrepreneurship. And kind of the second layer is this tricky layer where you sort of do things that you have no idea what you're doing. And this is important because, you know, nobody really knows the future, right? So a great example is there was this company, I'm sure some of your listeners know of this story, but there was this company called Odeo, which was like a podcasting platform. They made software to help people do podcasts. And it wasn't really doing that well. This was like in 2005 or whatever. It wasn't really doing so great. And some of the programmers started a project on the side where they could send SMS style messages to each other. And, you know, and that little side project started taking off. So the CEO of Odeo said to all of his investors, and they were all the best venture capitalists in the world. Like, they were the top guys. And you would think they would know the future one way or the other. And they had all made their bet on Odeo, on the podcasting software. So the CEO said to them, listen, it's not really working out. This little side project seems fun, but it only has 10,000 users, which it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. I am willing to make sure you're all even. Like, I will give you back all of your money at cost, all the money you invested in my company, and or you can stay in and we're going to play with this new little project that only has 10,000 users. So he gave that offer to all of his investors, and they were all venture capitalists, all professionals. 100% of these professional investors said, I'm going to take my money back. I really do not want to go into your other little crappy project. And so he gave them all their money back. And the other project eventually went public. It's a little company called Twitter. And it was just a huge success. So who would know? All these professionals didn't know. The CEO didn't really know. He was just excited about it. He had already made his, you know, tens of millions when he sold Blogger to Google. So he wasn't sweating it that much either. And, you know, which is why he's probably not the CEO anymore. He gave it to a different CEO. But so nobody really knows the future. So you kind of have to make that leap into something you don't know. So let's say this guy, you know, in an extreme case, let's say this guy does not know how to make a video game. Well, there are 1,000 companies out there that you can delegate to. I have this idea for a video game. Can you make it? And they'll say, sure, it'll cost you $3,000. We'll make it for you from beginning to end. And then he can say to himself, well, what if they steal my idea? Which, by the way, they're not. Nobody. Right. Very great. 1 out of 1,000 steal, or 1 out of 100,000 steal ideas. But okay, worst comes to worst, outsource it to a software company in India. Let them steal it in India. They're not going to steal it. They're not going to be able to market it here in the US the way you would, because you have the passion for it. Passion is always the best way to protect an idea. Nice. So that's how he would handle the situation if he didn't know how to program video games. Now he's got a video game. He doesn't know how to market it. Okay, well, he does know how. He can put it in the App Store on iTunes and on Google, and then he can make Facebook ads. You know, you can make a Facebook ad for as cheap as like $5, and you can make 20 of them, and you can see which, you could test which ones are people clicking on and actually downloading the app. And then when you see one that works out of your 20 ads, you can start adding money to that one, and so on. There's many blogs and books and texts on how to market apps now even. Or you can hire a company to help you market your app and pay them, you know, per performance. So again, you don't have to know anything. In fact, what I would encourage that guy to do is to come up with 10 ideas for apps or games and make all of them and try all of them. And you know, there's a lot of people think, oh, well, I know how to make a car, so I better start a car company. Well, we live in a different world now. You know, an app only, a car company costs you $1 million, you know, back in 1900. An app company costs you a few thousand dollars to start. So start 10 app companies and see what happens. Like, you know, that's how it's worked for me in every single case. I had no idea what I was doing. I started many things and some things worked. You know, actually, most 90% of things did not work. And one thing worked or zero things worked. And then I would either focus on the one thing that worked or I would throw away all the ideas and start something new.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can give the ideas like you always say, right? If you have 10 ideas, like if he writes 10 ideas down for great video games, like he can just give those to somebody else. And that will, I actually just in my email on Monday, somebody randomly, his name is Andrew, I believe. And Monday morning, I woke up and there was 10 ideas. Like a couple of them were actually really, really smart. The other ones were like, okay, I've thought of that. But it was like, here's what you can do with Hack the Entrepreneur and like different like business places you can go. Like here's a section of books you can create. Here's a, I was like, wow, who is this guy? And
that's
I responded to
him.
I'm like, yeah. And I was like, did you get this from James Altucher? He's like, I've been reading his blog for a couple of years and I know the idea machine, but I never thought of this. I just kind of 28 days in a row, he's been doing this now and just emails them to people. He has no clue what they are. I was like, well, do you know how to implement these? Is that the point? Is this like to build business? He's like, no, I have no idea how this, but I mean, if you want help with any of them, I'll see what I can do. But that was not the point. I came up with these ideas last night and I thought you could maybe use them, John.
Yeah, that is
That's
a
brilliant.
Great thing to do. If you do that every day, then most people won't respond to you, but I guarantee you within 6 months, you're making a great living. If that's all that guy does every day is those 10 ideas to people like you or people like me, yeah. Then he is going to be making a great living within 6 months. He's going to be making a great living within 2 years, and he's going to be rich within 3 to 4 years. Like that's how it works every time, 100% of the time. That's how it's worked for me. I've had to start from scratch. I always start from scratch doing those ideas and sending them to people. And you know what? Sometimes I send them to people and they say, it's great. Can I hire you to do this? And I ignore that response because I'm on to my next 10 ideas.
Right.
So you just have to find the, you know, I'm happy to just give. And then you just have to find the right match. Like sometimes you're going to give and they're going to respond, but it's not quite the right match. Sometimes you give and they respond and you feel like, okay, this feels right.
Right. And they don't even all have to be like the James Altuchers of the world, do they?
No.
I mean, it's me. Like I'm not, I just have a podcast, a small podcast that's less than 3 months old. Yet it's funny because he emailed me and I was like, oh, today, actually, I responded back to him because he had sent me another email. And I was like, actually, I'm talking to James later today. That's interesting. He's like, oh, wow. And I was like, that's interesting, isn't it? Like, what a weird connection. Just because he put out the effort. Now we're actually talking about him.
Right. And also, that's a connection you'll have for the next 10 years. So let's say you never talk to him again. Okay. And 10 years from now, you build a business and it turns out he's the head of business development at Google. And you could say, hey, remember you sent me those 10 ideas 10 years ago. I've got this other business now. I'm going to be in San Francisco. Would you love to meet? Of course, 99% chance he's going to say, whoa, John, that's great. We haven't talked in 10 years. Let's meet. So these things build up over time. I was just talking this morning with my wife, Claudia, actually. And, you know, I was thinking how, and this is something I've learned from my podcast a lot, just talking to so many people who have been successes in their different fields. But success can be measured. Forget all of a second kind of the self-help. Success could be measured by your inward stuff. I'm going to just be blatant about money. So success could be measured today, like how much did I make today? Or success could be measured in decades. Like those are really the two metrics because, you know, almost everyone I've spoken to, they had their good years and their down years and their good days and their down days. But over time, over decades, their contacts, their intelligence, their creativity, their ability to execute grew and grew and grew. And then finally, they hit upon that lucky set of circumstances over decades that really propelled them into the quote unquote overnight success. And I can't think of an example where it didn't work like that. So it's important to remember that success is measured today, like how many people did I help today? How many opportunities did I create for myself to make money today? How much money did I make today? But also to keep in mind, you're planting seeds for the future. So it's like you're planting perennial seeds. So perennial seeds, you throw them in your garden, 10 to 20% of them will grow into plants. The rest of them will disappear. And then 10 years later, those plants are still growing. So, and it's the same thing, or 20 years later or 30 years later. And so sometimes that's depressing. Well, I want success now. I'm feeling really sick right now because I can't pay my mortgage. Well, that's fine. Work on ways to pay your mortgage today. But keep in mind always, you're still planting seeds for 20 or 30 years out where amazing wealth is created.
Exactly. And you said something interesting. When you said talking to the people in your podcast, and they've had their ups and downs, but they've also had an ability to execute. So you're right. Ideas, being an idea machine, is great. But at some point, you also have to execute, whether it's executing, I'm going to write 10 ideas a day and send them off, or I'm going to start a business with this idea, this video game, or anything. How do you get the ability to execute? Or how did you, or how do you still work through having the ability every day to execute what you, James, want to do?
For me, I'm involved in a lot of different businesses. I do a podcast. I also write a lot. So I'm writing books and blog posts and so on. So for me, I don't do a to-do list because I can only do one thing at a time. So even if I do a to-do list, it's not like I'm going to do 10 things, you know, in the next moment. I'm only going to do in the moment what's the most important thing to me at this moment. So it might be in the morning writing a post, and I'll block everything else off, the internet, emails, phone, and I'll write my post. And then it might be the case in the afternoon. Okay, well, I'm on the board of directors of a company. They're having some problems that I think I can help them with. That's the most important thing for me to do. I'm going to call them up. And then I might think to myself, okay, well, now what's the most important thing for me to do? Well, I want to get some more podcast guests for February. I'm going to write to these three people and see if they're willing to be my podcast guests. So again, each step of the way, I'm always thinking, what's the most important thing for me to do right now? I don't bother with a to-do list because if people do a to-do list so they can remember things. Well, if I forget something, probably means it wasn't really that important to me in the beginning. So I'm only going to do the one thing that's important to me right now. Now, at the end of the day, I do an I did list because it always turns out I did so many more things than I ever possibly could have imagined putting on a to-do list. But that's another point. But the I did list, you know, keeps me going and makes me realize all the time that I actually get a lot accomplished during the day. You know, on most days, not every day. But for me, in specific cases, execution, again, is something you learn. So, you know, like if I'm going to make a website, I know how to make websites. So I know, okay, well, here's what the front page looks like. Here's all the buttons. Here's what it looks like if you're signed in. Here's what it looks like if you're not signed in. Here's all the features I'm going to offer. For each feature, here's what that page looks like. Once I have that sketched out, I might outsource the development of the website to a website developer. You know, so that's a typical case of execution. Now, some people have a hard time getting themselves going on execution. Mm-hmm. And I have that hard time too. So I might have ideas for 10 websites, but only the website that really excites me will I really spec it out in that way. You know, the same thing goes if I'm, let's say I have an agency. So I used to run a website agency back in the 90s. If some clients didn't excite me, I would keep telling myself, oh, I should write the proposal for that client. But if the client didn't excite me, I never would write the proposal. It was only when I was really excited about a client, I would sit down and I would just simply write the proposal because I wanted to make a website for that client. You know, another example is take Mark Cuban. So everyone, a typical response when someone mentions Mark Cuban is, oh my God, that guy got so lucky. He sold broadcast.com to Yahoo. Yahoo went up to $400 a share. He made billions and then he sold it. People forget, you know, Mark Cuban first started a bar. Then he started a computer software company, sold that. Then, and he went door to door selling like software or hardware or whatever it was. Then he started a hedge fund. Then he started broadcast.com. And it was a small company. And he built up and he built up and he built up and he raised money. But by then he already had some money. So he was much more advanced at all aspects of business. So executing on a business, building a product, raising money. And even then, you know, he went through the IPO stage, but he already knew how to go through the IPO stage because he had run a hedge fund where his money was parked at Goldman Sachs. So Goldman Sachs took broadcast.com public. And by then, he was so sophisticated in the markets, okay, he knew now's the time to sell to Yahoo And now's the time to sell because he spent years buying and selling stocks. He had a sense of when it was the time to sell. So everyone can call everyone else lucky. Oh, Dallas Mavericks is another great example. I think he bought that for $200 or $300 million. Now the Clippers, you know, which had that guy who made that racist comment, he had to sell the Clippers.
Yeah.
He sold the Clippers for $2 billion to Steve Ballmer. And the Clippers, I didn't even know that basketball team existed. It's like the worst basketball team in the world. You know, Mark Cuban has the Dallas Mavericks. He bought it for, again, $200 or $300 million. What's that worth now? $4 billion? Like, it's worth this enormous amount more than he paid for it. Did he get lucky? No, I don't think so. You see pictures of him every day, you know, on the Mavericks court, being involved, doing stuff. He knows how to execute. But he learned that over time. He learned that over a period of probably 25 years when he first started a bar. And he learned how to open up and close and make sure he wasn't robbed and make sure he had the right inventory and make sure he provided great customer service. All the basic things you need to do to run a bar, he still does, just at a much bigger scale.
He also says you only have to, with business, you don't have to, or entrepreneurship, you don't have to be good or get successful all the time. Like, really, he's like, you can get successful once or twice and, like, be set. Like, he became a billionaire once. He doesn't need to become a billionaire again. So, like, what are your thoughts? Because you're talking about, you're like, oh, this was $2 billion, and he bought this for $300 million. There's, if we're someone like at a job or we don't have that money, it's fine to say we can start with ideas, which is great, and then in a few years. But what are your thoughts on like the abundance and the bigness of ideas? Your first company sold for $10 million. That's a lot of money.
Right.
Right? So what do you think about taking on a project now or something? What is your thought on bigness? Does it have to be like this massive scale idea? Or can they just be ideas that you just want to run with? Is it worth your time kind of thing?
Well, I write blog posts for free. So, you know, I don't make any money on those. Now, people can say, oh, well, it's easy to say he doesn't necessarily have to make money. You know, whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter. A lot of people write blog posts for free. But I do get involved in other projects. And I like to think of, I do have a bar where I'm going to get involved in a project if it means A, I'm going to be helping a lot of people, and B, there's a potential here to make at least tens of millions of dollars, if not more. And, you know, so far so good. Those projects are working out. Some projects don't work out. Some projects I get involved in don't work out. You know, like Mark Cuban said, you never really know what's going to work out and what isn't. But I'm involved in like 30 different companies right now. You know, some as an investor, some as a board member, some as an advisor, but I'm probably involved in like 30 companies. Some I'm involved with because I just love the idea. Some I'm involved with because I have smarter friends than me who said, hey, you should just piggyback what I'm doing. And some I'm involved with because I realize I can help a lot of people if I do this and make money at the same time. You know, those two things are possible. A lot of people think if you're helping a lot of people, you're not making money, but I like to get involved in projects where I can do both.
Right. But I just, so bigness though, I read your blog and there's never, you're never talking about somebody like, or you like, oh, and it was like, made like $20,000 a month or something, or $5,000 a month. It was like, it's huge, right? It's like you bought a company. I was reading, I can't remember the company name, but like for like $20 million on paper, you got like a letter of intent. Like these are big numbers. And like most people would never have the balls to just like even do that.
Right.
Is that an abundance thought? How do you even think in such a scale like that? And how,
you know, stuff like that. And I do. And that is kind of this sort of second or third layer of entrepreneurship where you kind of have to jump into the deep end of the water. Like in that particular case, I had just sold my company, which was making websites. And I had this, you know, not really earth-shaking idea. Well, okay, that's the internet, but soon there's going to be the wireless internet. So the internet was still going hot. I figured, okay, I'm going to do something in the wireless internet. I didn't even know what that meant. I assumed it meant something with phones, but this was 1999. Smartphones weren't really around. There was the BlackBerry and that was it. So, but what I did was I wrote to 20 different companies that literally just had the words wireless or mobile in their company description. I had no idea what any of them did. And I said, you know, I'm the CEO of a wireless, you know, I think I was calling myself US Mobile or US Wireless, something weird.
Completely made up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I wasn't trying to be deceptive, but I said, I'm interested in buying your company. And, you know, 19 of them didn't really respond to, maybe 18 of them didn't respond to me. Two did, one I didn't like. And then the one said, hey, we're about to be in New York because Ericsson just offered us, I think it was $19 million. So this is perfect time to talk to you. And I said, I met with them and I said, I can't believe you're even considering Ericsson. Like, you know, they're old school phone company. Like, what are you going to do with them? Like, how is it going to grow? I'll offer you $30 million and half of that can be stock in my company. And we're going to IPO in a year. And look what's happening to IPOs right now. You know, we were in an IPO bubble, not an internet bubble, but an IPO bubble. And so they thought it over for a day or two and they said, okay, yes. And so I signed a letter of intent with them, which gave me exclusively, they couldn't sell to anybody else. I had 6 months to buy them. And so that was suddenly my company had a real asset, a real tangible asset. I had a letter of intent to buy this company with real revenues and profits, and I had 6 months to do it. So I called up basically every billionaire I knew, and I didn't know that many billionaires, I should add. I called one banker who introduced me to his boss, who introduced me then to a bunch of billionaires. So it was a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And he started raising the money for me and he became a partner in the business. And we did raise $30 million. So I gave these guys $15 million and then we had $15 million in the bank still. And I bought two more companies. And now suddenly I was a company with real revenues and profits and everything. And every bank was pitching us to take us public. Now, it didn't really work out so well, like the internet bubble burst, but that was a situation where I didn't do anything deceptive. Like I made an offer to them, which they agreed to. And then I did pay them their money. And and when I raised money, I didn't start raising money until I had a real asset, which is this LOI. But sometimes you kind of have to be clever how you do what order you do things.
Oh yeah, it's smart.
If you do the traditional order, then nothing's going to happen or it's going to take too long. You have to kind of like dive right into it. I remember one meeting I had, I was pitching investors and they were like, well, how does this work again? How does the whole mobile thing work? And I said, well, you know, you make a call and it goes up to a satellite and then it comes down. And they interrupted me and they were like, wait, isn't there cell phone towers? It doesn't go up to satellites. And I was like, I guess so. Like maybe only sometimes it goes to satellites. Like I was trying to, you know, I guess there was a company Iridium at the time, which did go to satellites, but everything else went through cell phone towers. So, you know,
and so did your company.
But they invested $5 million. And not only that, they set me up in a venture capital firm alongside the company. And so, you know, things happened. And that was just one thing I tried. You know, at the same time I was trying that, I actually set up a company where I made the website and everything. And I've never really talked about this before, but I set up a company where you could put your name and your profile and your photo and you could keep like a journal and you could link to other people. Like you could be friends with other people and other people could send you messages. So I had created this website, which was almost like a social network. My only problem was I was calling it a beauty contest. Like I was going to say, this was the world's largest beauty contest on the internet. But when my wireless thing started taking off, I kind of completely forgot about this beauty contest thing. But I could have also potentially set up a social network. I even had some beauty magazine want to sponsor it. So I called them and I said, I have this website done. I'd like you to be equity partner. Let's feature it in your magazine. And they were willing to do it. But then I just kind of forgot about the whole thing. But maybe that could have been Facebook for all I know. And I didn't do it.
Right. And is that okay, though? Like, are you cool with that? Does that make sense that how you should work, that it doesn't matter that you left that thing that could have been something big because you went on to something else and you did, you know what I mean? Like people sometimes, I think to a fault almost, want to have a clear direction. Like we're coming into a new year. I want to be completely clear with the next year what I'm going to do and I don't want to deviate from that rather than.
Well, John, let me ask you a question. December 31st, 2013, you're sitting around with your friends and family and you're thinking to everybody's thinking what their New Year's resolution is going to be. Did you think you were going to start a podcast in 2014?
No.
And so you started this podcast when?
I started in July recording.
So July was only six or seven months later. Why didn't you know on December 31st or January 1st you were going to start this podcast?
Because I hadn't met the people I met in March.
Right.
Convinced
so March was only 3 months later. Mm-hmm. So, and did you even know them or did you even know their friends on January 1st?
No.
Right. So we have no ability to predict the future at all. You couldn't even predict 3 months ahead the friends of the people who are going to convince you to do a podcast just 3 months later. And now how many podcast episodes have you done?
37 yesterday.
37.
Are released, yeah.
So the year of 2014 really for you is the year of the podcast.
That's what they said in March. They said that to me for a week solid. We were in the Philippines together. And it was like, it's the year of the podcast, John. It's the year of the podcast.
On January 1st, were you in the Philippines?
No, we weren't.
Did you know you were going to be in the Philippines?
I did. I knew I was
okay, you knew you were going to go there, but you didn't know you were going to go there to start a whole career in podcasting.
Not at all.
What did you go there for?
I went there for like a mastermind conference.
Session. Okay. All right. I get it. So
we were working like there was something. I mean, I was there for business, but I was doing a different business at the time.
Right. So, but have you made a dime off this podcast yet?
Off these? A couple of dimes. Just from sponsor. Right. Yeah.
So, okay. So you had no idea. You could have said as a New Year's resolution, I'm going to write a thriller novel by the end of 2014. But no, instead, you've made so far 37 podcasts, yeah. You know, which is incredible and incredibly creative. And it's difficult work and it's hard execution. You know, for me, last December 31st, I hadn't started a podcast. Now I do 8 a day across 2 podcasts and I'm probably going to launch a 3rd podcast. So, you know, I had no idea. And then I also wrote another book. I had no idea I was going to write. We have no real ability to predict our future. And so more important is to have themes. So you had a theme on January 1st, which is, okay, I want to improve myself. And so I have this idea. I'm going to go to this mastermind and I'm going to be around really smart people who I'm going to hope to inspire and I'm going to hope they inspire me. And out of that is going to come probably a variety of ways and ideas I can use to improve myself. And that was a theme that you had rather than a very specific, narrow goal. And that theme you had led to you doing this podcast, which I'm sure you enjoy, else you wouldn't have done, you know, almost 40 of them.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I think for myself, you know, I'm starting and stopping things all the time. And, you know, some things work, some things don't. I would say the hardest times are when things work for many years and then suddenly they don't work. That's hard because you feel like you've put a lot of effort into something and then it didn't work. But, you know, other times you kind of, again, it's this idea that, you know, life itself is this, you know, sentence of failures only punctuated by the briefest of successes. And that's, you know, that's really the way you have to think of things. And that's not a depressing way. Ultimately, it's a whole, your lifetime is a whole conversation of these sentences.
Yeah, exactly. James, are you ever just, did you just sit there and just shocked by how far your ideas and just like the bearing of your absolute soul to people on your blog and now podcast and anywhere else you've done it, just how far it's taken you and how many people it's reached?
You know, I never think about it because I don't really get that much of a sense of it. You know, most of the time I'm just sitting in my room typing. And I just think every day, what am I going to write about? Like, that's the main thing on my mind. And I try to keep as a goal, okay, I'm going to be entertaining and I'm going to have value. So in most of my, I see all these posts, like, I don't know, 10 ways to make your morning better,
yeah,
or 10 ways to do a better interview. And nobody tells their kind of person, like, in order for someone to write that, they must have had a lot of really bad interviews. And so I want to see what was the story? Like every superhero has a secret origin. So anybody who's writing an article that's meant for the masses is like a superhero and they're giving their advice somehow from a pedestal. Well, I want them down at my level. I want to see when things hurt. Like that's just basic writing, that there's an arc where the hero's journey, where, you know, someone who didn't mean to be a hero goes through some hard times, learns from them, and then has a good outcome at the end. And, but often these articles, and it's 99% of articles, are so poorly written because they don't know this fundamental aspect of writing. And then on top of that, I read an enormous amount. So I try to learn from really good writers. I really, really try hard to learn every day more about writing. Like, it's just my main focus. It's my main love in life. And I hope I do a good job at it. I think sometimes I help people and sometimes I get nice emails. But of course, you know, there's also hate mails occasionally. And so I just every day try to start from scratch and write something I think will be fun.
Excellent. Yeah, your reach is big. Just in the last like 2 weeks since we booked this, just I would say to people like just two words, James Altucher, and people are like, oh my God, you get to talk to him?
That makes me happy.
So you're the one person and I've talked to some brilliant people, but James Altucher you have this aura about you.
That's good to know. And you know, the funny thing is like, okay, I've sold good numbers of copies of books, but not like, you know, 50 Shades of Grey kind of copies. But I think my articles have been read quite a lot. And I think people were in more of an article society than a full book society. Like, you know, most people, when they buy a book, they only read, you know, the first chapter and then they put the book down. But I think with articles, people read the whole article. And if you can make an impression in the beginning, in the middle, of the end of the article, then they know who you are when they see the next article that comes in your style. And I'm always playing too. Like I write all sorts of stuff across different genres of both nonfiction and even a little bit of fiction.
Excellent. I have one question for you to end this off. If your career was to end today, would you be happy with the legacy that you've already got to leave so far?
Absolutely. I am really happy. I feel like 5 years ago, I would have answered no to that question because I was very unhappy. But I'm really happy how things have gone in the past 5 years. And really, it boils down to this physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual health. If, for instance, you write down 10 ideas a day and just exercise that idea muscle, and then eventually start sharing and giving of these ideas, it's just going to create huge value in the universe. And so I would say the answer is yes. In fact, look, if I were to die tomorrow, no problem. As long as it's not like a painful death. As long as my kids would have to get over it. Like that would be the only, and Claudia, my wife, that would be the sad thing if I were to die tomorrow. But other than that, I'm fine with dying tomorrow as long as it's not painful.
Excellent. I love it. James, thank you so much. We've talked just so much about you and I guess your blog. Can you just tell everybody, in case they don't know, but I'm sure they do, where to find you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My blog is at jamesaltucher.com, ALTUCHER.com. But I do most of my posts really on my email list. I don't post as much. I post once every week or so on my blog, kind of to keep it alive. But I post mostly on Facebook and on my email list and on places like Quora and LinkedIn. And then kind of almost as an afterthought, I post on my blog. But my blog also has links to my email list. It has links to my podcasts. It has links to a contact page where people can send me questions. Also, I encourage people, I give out my phone number. So my phone just rang from an unknown number because I give out my phone number on my podcast and people can text me questions, which I'll try to answer, 203-512-2161. And so I don't always answer directly by text because I have a hard time writing on the phone, but I'll try to answer always in an Ask Altucher podcast.
That's awesome. James, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for everything you do. And thanks for spending the time with us today.
John, thanks so much for inviting me on your podcast. Best of luck with it. And I hope you have good success with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks.
James, thank you so much for that brilliant conversation. That was amazing. So James did something cool there. He said something really interesting, and it's got me thinking. So not only did he give me, I think I have written down here, 5 potential hacks, which is hard. This is going to be a hard, hard choice. I want to try something, because he mentioned at the end that he gives out his cell phone number on his podcast. Let's try this. My cell phone number, I'll give it to you, and I want you to not listen to the hack right now. I want to think about what the hack is and see if we can choose the same one. Let's try it. I want you to text me at 807-472-5290. 807-472-5290. That's my cell phone. Text me. Tell me what you think the hack was. And then listen to it and we'll see if you're right. Or if you just have any questions. Or just say hi. Tell me you listened. That's my cell phone number. Anyways, This was an amazing conversation. It was a bit longer, so let's get to it. He said one thing, didn't he? Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
We have no real ability to predict our future. And so more important is to have themes. So you had a theme on January 1st, which is, okay, I want to improve myself. And so I have this idea. I'm going to go to this mastermind and I'm going to be around really smart people who I'm going to hope to inspire, and I'm going to hope they inspire me. And out of that is going to come probably a variety of ways and ideas I can use to improve myself. And that was a theme that you had rather than a very specific, narrow goal. And that theme you had led to you doing this podcast, which I'm sure you enjoy, else you wouldn't have done, you know, almost 40 of them.
And that's the hack. James, brilliant. Again, I love it. So themes rather than goals. It's true. We don't know where the future is going to lead us. And this is something that really resonated with me. I guess the new year's coming. I have a mastermind group. They're talking about goals. I have friends trying to sort out what we're going to do. And I haven't come up with any. Maybe it's okay. James says it's okay. I trust James. It's true, because I was even saying to somebody the other day, I was like, well, I know that I want to create a business next year. I'm sure. It's just something I know that I have to do. I have to create something new. This podcast ended up being a business that I got to create this year. And he's right. I had no idea I was going to create it. And I think if I cut myself off from the idea that I can even do just whatever it's going to be in this coming year, not only will I get bored and I won't be passionate about it, but I don't think I'll be successful at it because of those two things. So I love that. Go into the whatever it is, if it's the new year or if this is March when you hear it, it doesn't matter, but it's true. You have to be open to it because we can't predict it, but have themes of things that you do want to do. Do you want to choose yourself, as James's book says, that I think you should read? Or do you want to, it's whatever you want to do, but you do have to set up those themes, and there's no better way, I think, to set yourself up and to send yourself into the future, whatever that's going to be, and set yourself up for success as you see it. So thank you so much, so much, so much. This has been an amazing episode. I got this one out way quicker than I typically do with an episode, because I was really, really inspired by it. And I really love that message, how it resonated with me. If you haven't checked it out yet, hacktheentrepreneur.com/insider. I'm setting up a mastermind group. I want 25 people that we're going to work together, and we are going to set themes, I guess, as James would say, for ourselves and for each other, and we're going to push each other to grow, to become better people, to do cool things next year. It's very cool. You can check it out. I've already, I think, 5 spots are gone already. I put it up about 2 days ago. So if it's still available when you get to hear this, go check it out, hacktheentrepreneur.com/insider. If it's right for you, I would love to have you in there. Again, if you have any questions or you just want to say hi to me, 807-472-5290 is my cell phone. Give me a text. Tell me what's up and say hi. Maybe it's quicker. My email is getting jam-packed with stuff and I keep missing things potentially. So I guess the phone is the new way. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much again for everything. And until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.